Being here.
This may say.
Yes, I'm here.
I've got, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got five copies of.
I don't think we'll, it's only what you've already lodged.
You don't need them, so.
There's no audience that will need them.
But I have a special treat here.
Chocolate.
Summary.
Chocolate. I like it.
Can you three? I've got five copies of the article I wrote in the Mirror this week, which you may not have picked up on. Some of you may have, some of you may not have. The reason I'm giving you that article is sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees. Although that's fairly simplistic, the article, it does kind of sum up the way I feel about what's happening with these changes to the plan.
Now, Mr. Howard, we have all read the Electric Lodge, so
I marked about 30% of it, I think, so it should. It won't fit in an hour. I'll do my best.
All right. Yeah, okay.
I'm happy to come back. I'm happy to come to Queenstown, anything you want. Yeah. Going to page 2.
Of your original or your...
I've only got one brief of evidence, yeah. Which is 33 pages long. Yeah. Yeah. Submissions and evidence. Partway down page 2. Council's undertaking a review of the district plan. Because this is a review, it follows that where the rural provisions of the district plan, and of course the society is focusing on rural matters, particularly matters relating to the rural general or the rural zone and subdivision and development, within that zone, are currently functioning well. There is no reason to make major amendments to them. The plan should be rolled over. This is especially true given that the operative district plan was written under essentially the same Resource Management Act that we are dealing with today. Amendments to the Act made since the ODP was written have little influence, if any, on the district plan review process. The ODP's rural provisions were written after many days of environmental hearings, where many expert planners, landscape architects, lawyers, and the court were involved. This resulted in groundbreaking, innovative, and much lauded rural provisions.
Mr. Howard?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you don't need to read out verbatim what's there, because we've read it. It would be much better from our point of view if you could just point us to the high points, and that way we will easily have your evidence dealt with within an hour.
Yeah.
In fact, I would have thought 2 minutes.
I'll do my best, sir. So you can see that the point is that we're saying that the vast majority of objectives, policies, and assessment matters, the rural objectives, policy and assessment matters, are functioning well in the existing plan. That's our position. Moving down the page, there's a big quote with three paragraphs, at the end of which it says, there is much that works about the current zoning, and the council should consider carefully before setting about any comprehensive overhaul. Now that comes from a council report. The Rural General Zone Monitoring Report. Now, I bumped into a local lawyer over in Queenstown last week, prominent local lawyer, I would say, and this person said to me, why on earth are they relitigating the rural part of the plan? It was off the record, so I don't want to And I go on to talk about how the council's own report, the District Plan Rural General Monitoring Report, says that there's adequate clout to climb residential building platforms and hence the right to build on locations that are too prominent. Now, a theme throughout my submissions and evidence today will be that I think that's right. I think the current plan is right. I think there are problems implementing it, perhaps, but the plan is strong enough. We're certainly open to a few small amendments. So I think I've made a number of quotes there that there seem to be, at least until recently, a groundswell that the district plan was working reasonably well. Then the third paragraph down here, I do think the plan in submissions has been heavily influenced by stakeholders, and especially the landowner lobby. I mean, exactly the same thing happened 20 years ago when the current operative district plan was written, and it was only in the court that we sorted it all out. About halfway down the page, proposed district plan draft review section 32 evaluation report said that the existing process works. Again, I'll say that again. That statement's been removed from the publicly notified material, which is interesting. I'm a bit perturbed that some of these statements have been... we commented on these statements in submissions on that draft, and then they were removed. Okay, I'll come back to this point, but the way that these section 32 and section 42 reports have been written may be misleading the commissioners, and of course the general public as well, to a certain extent. And then I talk about the draft review saying, talks about the risk of not acting. And there's a quote there that talks about there's an opportunity to roll over, so on, so on, so on. Again, this statement has been removed from the publicly notified material. But to a certain extent, this seems to be the real motivation for the changes proposed to the rural provisions. Yeah? They're partly economically focused, based on changes to the IMA which have never been enacted, and I know there are things before Parliament now, but I don't think those are any more economically focused than what we already have in the Act. And then at the bottom of the page three, I talk about how the operative district plan already contains economy-friendly objectives and policies. And where all activities are assessed in an effects-based manner, including activities in the rural area. And this assessment balances the positive economic gain from those activities against the adverse effects that eventuate. But there's always that balance to be put together. Now, page four. Here I detail the changes to the rural provisions that the society seeks, and that goes all the way through from A to L. Now, if you look at those, I'm not going to go through them, but certainly A to H, we agree with council. Yeah. We're on the same page as council. There's some minor changes there. On the same page as the council. These are quite major changes to the district plan. They will simplify the district plan hugely, and the society is right on side with council with most of them. There's some variations. We're saying that the objectives, policies, and assessment matters for ONL Wakatipu Basin should be retained for all ONL. Now there may be arguments as to whether there should be an amalgam of these objectives, policies, and assessments ONL district wide, and those objectives I just talked about. The same goes for what used to be visual amenity objectives, policies, and assessments. That we're saying you retain the objectives, objective policies assessment to a visual amenity landscape that are in the current plan. You could argue that they should be an amalgam of VAL and ORL assessments policies and objectives. But the reason that we've gone for the higher level in both cases is a theme I'm going to come back to again and again, which is not emphasised enough in the Section 32 report. And that is 350 people have applied for upzoning in this district. The population is forecast to double in the next 15 years, more than double in the next 15 years. Our economy is under massive development pressure. Our rural landscape is under massive development pressure. And this is something that doesn't come through anywhere near enough. Growth is dealt with superbly in the Section 32 reports. There's an excellent council that have obviously employed some really good consultants that have done detailed growth analysis. Brilliant. Yeah. I still don't think that feeling comes through that the landscapes are under massive threat from growth and all this upzoning that's happening. And I mean, we won't have any decent undeveloped open space landscape left if we're not careful. There's one important point here. I don't know if the commissioners are familiar with this is point J on page 5. I don't know if the commissioners are familiar with the Glen Tarn decision. I'll be returning to this in the rural area, but that decision made any house that connected to farming in outstanding natural landscape a controlled activity on about 50 hectares. Yeah. That is a serious, that blasted a serious hole in the operative district plan. So we are asking for a policy which clearly highlights I think that's in the rural section, but highlights the primacy of landscape outcomes above small so-called farms like that. It's an important issue. Now, I go on to say the Society seeks these amendments because... I talk about how all the case law will become irrelevant if the rural section is completely rewritten. Now, also, of course, all the knowledge built up by lawyers, the public, commissioners like yourselves, the court, on the district plan that we currently have, that will go out the window as well. Now, we had a question yesterday from, I think it was, very perceptive question from Commissioner Robinson to Mr. Barr, and they're asking him something to the tune of what about the legacy that's gone before? I think you refer to it as sunk costs. All these sunk costs because if we have to change the plan with all the appeals and all the lost knowledge that we lose, these are effectively sunk costs that we're going to lose, we have to start again. Mr. Barr's answer, it's a two-part answer that I picked up anyway, and I'm paraphrasing but close enough. Yeah. He said Section 32 was silent on the legacy that's gone before. Completely silent on the fact that changing the plan has got a massive cost, yeah, in terms of all the things I've just described. Completely silent. Doesn't even deal with it. I mean, to me, that's a fundamental flaw in the Section 32 report. And it makes me worry about the whole attitude to the Section 32 report. And his second throwaway line was, we're trying to cut out the rust. Cut out the rust, he said. Well, you know, that's an extremely patronising thing to say in terms of the district plan that we have was written by a lot of seriously good brains in the court. Landscape architects, lawyers, and so on and so on. There's not much rust that needs to be cut out of this. Moving down the page. And you see there that in the bold I've highlighted the development pressure issue. Going on to page 6. Near the top. This is really important. Yeah. The society, in seeking the outcomes that I've described just now, we're relying on all these Environment Court decisions that are listed there. So that gives us a very strong hand to play, because really, council, if we do decide to appeal this, and that's the last thing I want to do, we would just go to court and say, court may fine decisions, and council will be on the back foot trying to point out to the court where it got it wrong. Yeah? So that's fairly important to the society's case. Page 7, I talk about the restructuring and about paragraph 5 or something like that. And the fact that you now have, instead of the rural, to analyse a resource consent in the rural zone, you need to go to chapters 3, 6 and 21 now. In the current plan, you only have to go to chapters 4 and 5. There's a little bit in chapter 15, but that's seldom looked at yet. But it's kind of taken as read. But that complicates things a little. And I talked there in that same chapter that it's only with detailed analysis of the proposed changes that you find out what's going on. Now, further down that page, there's a quote there where it says the status quo is represented by the sustainable management chapter of the ODP. Well, that comment is highly misleading. It's the objectives and policies in part 4 of district-wide and part 5 rural of the plan that represent the status quo, not that chapter. I mean, it makes me wonder if people who wrote that report understand how the plan worked. And then I talk about how clear, there's a clear statement for the planning and resource management aspirations at the top of page 8 in the operative district plan. And I quote that there. The next few paragraphs are making the point again that many of the things the society is submitting on agree with what the council is doing. And I make the point, these measures alone will greatly simplify the rural provisions of the district plan. Okay. Without the need for the massive restructuring. Page 9.
Yeah. It was authority.
It didn't take them long, did it? Got to speak to them all. Now, at the top of page 9, I talk about a review of decisions on notified resource consent applications indicates the district-wide landscape and rural general zone objectives and policies are often overlooked. Now, apologies to any of you who sit as commissioners here, but effectively, it's saying that these objectives and policies should be heavily amended and truncated because the commissioners can't be bothered to address them, and so give them weight. Now, of course, this is not always the case. I think it does happen sometimes. But that's not a reason to change them. The reason is to train your commissioners more or emphasise more how the plan works to the commissioners. Talk at the bottom of that page about how obviously this district relies on its landscape values. So the point here, of course, is that if we do degrade our landscape, that potentially has a major negative economic effect, which can be greater than the gains from fostering economic gains in other areas. You see, you mustn't forget that. We step up our landscapes, that in itself is a serious economic loss, potentially. Yeah? That doesn't come through in the Section 32 report. top of page 10, I say the ODP objectives and policies are well structured, and I give details of how I'm explaining to you, I'm sure you're aware already, but I'm explaining to you how they fit together. I won't go through it because you'll have read it. And I talk about how the court arrived at a suite of interlinked policies which are connected to each other. So there's a careful logic in the plan that we have, which again is not given much weight. Now I do have to go through the next bit in a bit of detail, so because I've made some stuff ups. Yeah. Just going to page 11 for a minute. At the bottom of the first paragraph, I've talked about the words, and I've talked to a number of words that have been deleted from the objectives and policies. Well, I put degradation in there. I checked that last night. Degradation appears about 8 or 9 times in the 6322, 6325, 6332. So I'd like the word degradation crossed out. That's simply a bad search by me. 6372 and so on. It appears numerous times. And I also noticed, well, having noticed that, I checked everything else. And I also noticed that there is a single objective, 3251, that relates, and I'm only talking here about objectives that relate to subdivision and development in the rural zone, but a single objective, 3251, that has the word natural in it. So I'm amending that. So I do want to go through this to make the point that, having messed that up, the crucial minor test and reasonably difficult to see test for subdivision and development has been removed. Yeah. They were previously in O&L, Wakatuba Basin. They're completely removed from the plan. Reasonably difficult to see appears in the assessment matters, but the minor test has been completely removed from the plan. The pro-farming policies dominate. There are 19 mentions of farming in the objectives and policies, compared to 1 in the operative district plan. Pro-economy objectives are promoted. The structures policy is deleted. The standalone rural amenity policy is deleted. All policies relating to subdivision development on highly visible slopes or prominent slopes, deleted. Visual coherence is demoted to a very minor side issue. The words openness, and that, now I have picked up one other mistake. 6353 has the word openness in it, but only, I withdraw that. The word openness in outstanding natural landscape has been deleted. It does appear in the rural landscape, sorry, yeah. So that's correct how it reads. Naturalness, natural, apart from the rider I just put, topography, are all deleted. And as I say, almost all of the references to natural are deleted. In fact, in terms of natural and naturalness, as our proposed district, in the objectives and policies that relate to rural subdivision and development, not the riverbeds, but the plans are basically similar on the riverbeds. The proposed district plan has one objective that contains the word natural. The operative district plan, and I'm ignoring O&L district-wide and assuming O&L Wakatuba Basin takes precedence. The operative district plan has 5 policies and 1 objective with the words natural or naturalness in them. So, to me, these changes rip the heart out of the objectives and policies. And when you go back to the detail is the key here. And I talk about the natural character in that next paragraph. The devil's in the detail. Now, the strategic direction chapter. Well, the reasons for the much changed proposed district plan structure and the rewriting of the rural objectives and policies. The first reason given is the objectives and policies do not align with the proposed strategic directions chapter. Well, yeah, I mean, to me this is a bit ridiculous. You include a strategic directions chapter that, in my opinion, you don't need anyway. And then you have to completely rewrite and truncate and all the objectives and policies to fit in with this chapter that, in my opinion, is not needed. And then on top of page 12, a number of elements espoused in the strategic directions chapter build on existing approaches in the operative district plan. Now, in essence, it sounds to me like the operative district plan already has these elements within it, and where they're not perfect, they could be modified a little. And then I don't want to go through this in detail with you, but I did go through each of the goals in the strategic development, in the SDC. And basically, I've said part 1.1, where it talks about sustainable management, that's all that's needed in terms of the making sure that the economic well-being of the district. We don't need... We've got an economy around here that's boomed for the last 20 years. Putting in superfluous policies that promote the economy when it's already booming, and when the definition of sustainable management, which is right at the front of the plan, tells us that we must cater for the economic well-being of the people in the community. That's all you need. And then I talk about further down, vacuous pro-farming objective 3.2.1.4, delete it. The climate change thing, yeah, that's good. You could move that to part 4 of the operative district plan. Now, I have been having to think about this. It's like a moving target, this. I'll come back to that in a second, but 3.2.2, you could, the goals, management of urban growth, and move that to the urban edges, move that to part 4, urban edges, that's where it should be. 3.2.3, a bit waffly, move it to 9, 10 and 11, 3.2.4.7, move it. 3.2.5, I've deleted. We've got better provisions in the operative district plan. Yeah, they're better provisions in the operative district plan. 3.2.6, well, that's laudable. I've been thinking about this. Later on, I'm going to reach a point where Mr. Pates or Pipes? How do you say his name? Pates. Mr. Pates talks about the fact that Christchurch Council rejected this strategic SDC structure, but it did go with very high level objectives or goals, I think. So Christchurch doesn't like this. Christchurch doesn't like the SDC. Christchurch has gone away from it. And it occurred to me, as I've been thinking about this and going through it, I'm thinking there are a number of things I've identified. Public access, the statement that we have finite resources in our rural landscapes for development. Safety, that one I was just talking about, the safety, health, strong, diverse community goal. Climate change, possibly even notification, yeah? I did check to see if notification is anywhere else in the plan, and it's not, as far as I can see. They could be very high-level goals, the ones I've just listed, potentially. So they wouldn't be detailed policies, they wouldn't be nitty-gritty policies, they would all be moved, as I said in this submission, into the relevant chapters, which are currently 4 or 5, and probably just 4, and various other chapters, 9, 10, 11, I'm talking about as they're numbered in the operative district plan. But there is some room for some high-level goals, like the ones I've just listed. And I can do some more detail on that in the future. But nothing to do with the rural subdivision and development. talked about the Treaty of Waitangi, that we've already got that in the Upper District Plan. Now, most efficient course of action, this is two-thirds of the way down page 13, the Council's proposing a major rewrite of the rural parts of the plan on a number of false assumptions, and I list them there and say that none of these are valid reasons for the major rewrite. Page 14. I deal in detail with the reason that Council has rejected the amend option to the plan and decided with a major era. And I go through the various details as to why the society thinks that to amend the plan makes much more sense. And again, I talk about the fact that the rural parts of the plan are understood by lawyers, expert witnesses, commissioners, and so on. And case law. Page 15. At the top there. I'll leave that. Moving on to the section 42A report from Mr. Pedge. I took the trouble to look at an interview he did, a question and answer interview, which is online. I've got a copy of it here. When he moved back to the property group in Auckland. And he says in that interview, he says, "I'm a city boy. I'm a city boy." Yeah. I'm familiar with ethnic dining options in he's got a great deal of knowledge of ethnic dining options in Auckland. Well, he may be a city boy. He may have knowledge of ethnic dining options in Auckland, but he doesn't seem to have a feel for the landscapes. He doesn't seem to have a feel for the culture of Queenstown and Wanaka. He ducks in from Auckland for 4 or 5 years, ducks out again, completely rewrites our plan. Has he got a feeling for what's going on around here? That's my point. I mean, second chapter, I note that there was no public consultation in the introduction of the SDC, but in my opinion, it's been foisted onto the community. Mr. Pipes talks about general lack of opposition to the provisions. Well, the society asked for the SDC to be deleted. Again, I talk about how the urban growth boundaries objectives and objectives should be in the urban development chapter. It makes complete sense. Further down, I discuss 8.1 and 8.10, and I make the point, surely if the relevant objectives and policies and goals if necessary, are positioned in relevant individual chapters, then this will be more cohesive and more user-friendly than moving them to a separate chapter. See, it's making the plan more complicated by moving these objectives and policies out of the chapter that they relate to and into this new SDC chapter.
I'm just wondering if you could speed up slightly because we might run out of the opportunity to question you.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Mr. Pipe said the resource management actually philosophical underpinning has changed significantly among planning practitioners. Well, the Act has hardly changed. Now, here's the thing I was just talking about. Page 16, paragraph 12.6. An alternative option for the strategic direction chapter may have been to provide high-level objectives. Now, there may be some merit to that. Yeah. But the detailed nitty-gritty objectives should be contained in the relevant chapters. Now, chapter 6, landscapes. I talk about how the reasonably difficult to see and minor tests are removed again, so I've already dealt with that. And I talk about the O&L water tipping basin there. The rest, this stuff is next couple of pages is about development pressure, so I won't go through that. On page 21, I talk about this issue where the district plan draft review proposed making subdivision development non-complying in outstanding natural landscape, outstanding natural features. Yeah. Now, again, Mr. Barr was questioned on this yesterday, and he said that that was thrown out because there was overwhelming submissions that should be thrown out. Well, the Society's submission on that was the Society supports the proposed non-compliant status in our now. Yeah. But he went on to say something else as he was questioned some more by Commissioner Cox. He said, and another reason for it was that it would be difficult to undertake farming on a day-to-day basis. That's what he said. Mr. Barr is enthralled to the farming lobby. That says it all. Yeah. And I've made that point before about the number of mentions of farming. This will come out more and more in the rural section as well. But he gave it away at the end there. I won't go through that because it's a legal issue, really. I do think, though, that they tried to. Planners have swept this under the carpet. This was a key issue at the last district plan hearings, the status of development in the rural zone. It was debated over long periods. I mean, it's a fundamental part of the resource management status of activities. Now, you can't sweep that under the carpet. Yeah. I mean, the question is, are they being devious or are they being incompetent by doing that? And I'll leave that for you to decide. Going on to the section 42A, planners report landscapes. One of the things he talks about there is paragraph 6.6 on page 23. Talks about the famous Arcadian word. Well, you know, I've talked to Di Lucas about this. This is like a red rag to a bull to the farmers, isn't it? It doesn't have to be retained in the plan. At the moment, that's the Society's position. But there are phrases you could put in instead of Arcadia to throw that word out. So long as they reflect something like a rustic, simple, peaceful, pastoral, this is what we're trying to keep, at least some of, in our rural landscape. You know, we're not going to die in the ditch to keep Arcadia. The farmer's blood pressure goes up every time I read that. Now, the thing I'd say about section 32, section 42A reports, that to me the court doesn't exist. It doesn't seem to exist. There seems to be one reference to a recent council decision. There's no indication that I've seen that the planners have read a single court decision, let alone the district plan decisions from 15 years ago. The fundamental. So. That worries me somewhat. Then, you know, 974, the ODP policies also recognise openness in the ONL. There's no specific reference to openness in the policies. I mean, where does that come from? I think what I've said about the landscape lines, I'll just give you time for a question. Pretty obvious what I'm saying there. I mean, it doesn't need much explanation. I'll just see, I might have a couple of now. But basically, I'm saying the lines that have been come up with are highly contentious and dubious because Dr. Reed and Stevens came up with two completely different lines, but in at least 12 of the maps in the upper Clutha. I haven't looked at the Waterloo verbatim, but it doesn't really matter. They're already in trouble here. And then, presumably over a cup of tea, they decided, we'll just agree on this line. Now, that's not the process to decide the landscape lines. I'm sorry. I've been to numerous court hearings where you get three landscape architects. There's a fine-grained analysis of the vicinity. The three landscape architects talk to each other at the hearing, as well as they're cross-examined. The court gets involved. The lawyers get involved. And in the end, we come up with something that is pretty good. You know, these lines are not good. Our preferred position is much that because they're contentious and dubious, they should not be included. If it got the issue off the table, we'd live with them being dotted, providing the wording that is in this submission is attached to them. And that's wording taken from the current district plan, so that it's made plain that they're dotted lines without status until they've been through the court. They're indicative lines for that status. I'll just see if there's any other key points I made. I noticed Miss Stephen criticises Dr. Reed's approach in a number of ways. Of course, there's an issue at the back as well, because I'm here for urban development as well. But it's fairly clear what we're asking for. But that's on the final page related to urban development. Thank you, sir.
I think the questions I have are more ones of clarity that Mr. Barr will respond to in his reply. There are various things the society has made that I would like a response to, but that won't happen.
Okay.
So thank you.
Just a general point. You make quite a statement about the reference to farming, the number of references is greater than that. This is a society, so rural land is a society against farming.
No, farming is a permitted activity. In
that's right.
Yeah, that's all you need. That,
what's the concern then you have about the number of mentions of farming in the plan?
As I spell out in here, we're dealing with legislation that's effects-based, but not activity-based. So I think it's wrong in law.
Okay.
Farming should be treated exactly the same as all the other activities. But the society has nothing against farming at all. No. It's a key element. It's very small compared with the tourist industry now. That's important, an important point.
Small
in terms of the tourist industry is 1.4 billion, they said on national radio a while ago. The Section 32 report's really needed. It would be useful if the planners could quantify how much farming is worth and how much the tourist industry is worth. But they did say 1.4 billion on national radio RMZ.
My reading is that the biggest issue for the society is the ability of development in the rural area outside of rural activities.
It's certainly not farming is not such an issue. It's the subdivision, residential subdivision. Spreading, that's the old poppy seed. If you look at the rural building platform maps for the Wakatuku Basin, for the Upper Clutha Basin, they are plastered with residential building platforms. And of course, many of them haven't been built yet, so you can't see the effect of what's already been consented to. I mean, things are getting a bit desperate in terms of protecting some of this landscape, even worse than Wakatuku, I think.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't realise, Mr. Howarth, one thing you haven't mentioned so much in this versus your original submission is the 1.6.18 re-non-notification.
You double that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, we just do, sorry. Yeah. Then, don't worry, I've just been noted it.
I'm just checking, Mr. Howarth. Welsh, you talked on page 21 about the issue of non-complying in the Section 32A, in the Section 32 report, and it being in the early, and then it not being there. Did the Society actually seek that subdivision be non-compliant in ONLs?
You may have heard me mention when it was in the draft before we got to the notified version, we supported it.
But in the submission that you'd lodged on the notified version, did you seek non-compliant?
I don't think we did. Yeah, I think our main issue was. It's difficult to do that. You see, any position we take like that means if council doesn't accept it and we appeal it, so we have to fight it through the court to get that. So we in fact, that's the approach I took. Our position has to be as consistent with council's position as we can live with. Yeah. And the discretionary regime works well.
Commissioner St. Clair, do you have any questions?
Yep, thanks. Mr. Howard, my understanding is that under the new plan, the idea is that the process of identifying landscapes and that is included within the plan rather than in the proposed plan, whereas in the operative plan, an assessment must be undertaken in regard to that for each. Do you have a view on which one works better or the reasons for that, particularly in regard to that?
I think that's in the assessment methods, isn't it? But we quite like that approach. The approach where I think you're asking, in the current plan, the landscape architects have to work out the type of landscape it is before they start to apply the assessment methods. It's a three-step process. We're supporting keeping that in the plan.
This is on page 15 where you're talking about the strategic direction chapter not being helpful or meaningful to decision makers. Do you have a view on whether decision makers should, when they're doing 104 assessments for resource consents, should they be looking at the entire plan or just parts of it?
I can't remember, section 104 is when they've decided whether it's minor,
that's the actual, or the whole decision about a resource consent. It sets out everything you have to take into account in regard to a resource consent.
I think they should look at the plan as it is, much truncated though this will be without all the superfluous steps. I think the plan fits together, like the objectives, policies, and assessment are meshed together. You really have to look at quite a lot of the plan to come to that kind of conclusion. There's no shortcuts.
In terms of the example you gave in regard to the Christchurch panel, taking out the strategic development chapter there. It's my understanding that they had additional ministerial statement of expectations which told them, in addition to the RMA, what they needed to do. The review whether that might be somewhat different, led them to a different result than what we might come up with.
That from Mr. Brownlee, is it? I don't see the need for that, but certainly that's it. My understanding, only from what I read in Mr. Parsons' report, is that they kept very, very high level objectives and the nitty-gritty stayed in the main plan. I didn't know about the are they directives from the minister or what exactly are they?
Well, that's
There's special legislation for the Christchurch
panel,
so they are, but they operate
under
their own legislation.
Yeah, yeah. I've been talking to Di Lucas about that, she's been involved here. I don't see that we need to adopt that here, do we?
The council hasn't.
No.
Good, that's why we have this panel.
That's all for me, thank you.
Thank you. Since you've gone back, you're relying heavily on the extent of analysis and argument that occurred in 1999 and the following years. Can I ask you, my reading of that, of the first and largest decision, which in effect drove all of the rest, C-180-99, is that the court found itself constrained as to what it could do because of the nature of the case that had been put to it, and it was emphasising that identification of where the ONLs and ONFs are is a key first step before deciding what the provisions should be. Do you think that's an aspect that we should pick up now, given that you're relying on the logic?
In an ideal world,
yeah.
If we could all agree landscape wise, that would be the best outcome. Because we only need one between ONL and rural landscape now, because we're shelving the world. In an ideal world. But the court's final decisions, as was talked about, and after evidence from prominent landscape architects like Mr. Rackham, the upshot was that it was a massively complicated exercise that would take a great deal of time. You're right. So at that point in time, for practical purposes, they decided to go on a case-by-case basis. Now, what we could have done in the intervening 15 years, but council hasn't done, is done the fine-grained analysis through the whole district. Yeah? Now, that hasn't been done by Dr. Reid and Stephen. A much more broad brush approach. There could have been fine-grained analysis, but that hasn't been done. So, yes, I agree. If we could do the landscape lines, that would be great, but what we've got in front of us at the moment won't hold up. It's too contentious, too dubious. There's no slamming, putting lines into the district plan that aren't correct. If we could have a lot of confidence in those, but you only have to look at the maps of Stephen and Reid to see that there's a huge difference. And it's not a fine-grained analysis.
Question for you is, have you considered the fact that the case law suggests that if ONLs and ONFs are identified in the plan, you still have the capacity to argue on a case-by-case basis that a particular feature or a particular landscape is outstanding even if it's not identified as such in the plan?
Yes, that makes sense. Yeah. It's always a bit of a moving target, but that would support putting the lines in as dotted, wouldn't it? As Bruce suggested, we'd live with that, you know? But you can't put solid lines in the contentious and dubious, but they could work. It would give some more certainty if you put them in as dotted, because there is some basis behind them from Reid and Stephen. But not the final line. We don't actually need that many more lines in this district at the moment. I'm not sure about over in Waikato, but most of those lines in Waikato were decided by the court last time in the Waikato Basin. So many of the lines are already in place.
My point is rather that if there are hard lines on the map, you could rely on everything within them being outstanding for the purposes of all future applications and still have the ability to argue in a future, in any particular situation, that notwithstanding that a landscape wasn't identified, wasn't within the hard lines, it was outstanding. Wouldn't that advance the society's objectives?
No, the reason being, I hear what you're saying, I understand completely the question. The reason is that we can't support dubious and contentious lines being put in as solid lines. That's our position. If we had confidence in those lines, sure.
Now, in terms of your position that the operative plan's working well, have you or the society ever been in the position of being an applicant and considered the operative plan from an applicant's perspective?
No, but I've been to so many hearings. I can put myself into the applicant's place. In fact, two or three friends of mine have been applicants, and I've talked to them extensively. So, some of them are members of the committee of the society. So that, which is always an interesting position. We have to submit against our own committee members. So I don't think that's an issue. I've got 21 years experience of dealing with this stuff, with the society, 26 years living here. I could put myself in the applicant's place very easily. As I say in here, I don't think an extra couple of hours of landscape evidence or planning evidence is too much to ask when we've got landscapes that are fundamental to our economy. It's so important. We have to make it hard for them.
In paragraph 10 of your evidence, Mr. Howard, you've got a series of bullet points, specific points of concern at the bottom of the page.
Page 10.
The point you're particularly making is pro-farming policies dominate 19 mentions of farming, and you say, well, there's only one in the current operative plan. Do you think it's a numbers game?
No, but I'll go back to the Glentarn decision, which spelt out that farming was very well catered for in the district, in the current plan, and that there was only one way to interpret this plan, and this is from the Glentarn decision, and that was that the farming was being enabled, and it was a very permissive regime in terms of farming. In this plan, we don't need to have these all these mentions of farming. So in fact, they may be contrary to the law, to the philosophy behind the act, which is effects-based.
You've anticipated my next question, which was to ask you about effects-based planning.